Metabolab, your biohack, a podcast where metabolic, cellular health is the priority.
Mindset, sleep cycle, nutrition, fitness, mitochondria, anti-aging, hormone disruptors, oxidative stress, fasting, ketosis, genomic-based precision medicine.
Biohacking is not simply a trend, it's the way to a longer, more abundant life. It is not just the future of health science, it is the future of medicine.
Welcome to the podcast, Metabolab, your biohack, with your host, Dr. Heather Bartlett, a healthcare innovator, disruptor, physician, and entrepreneur with a laser focus on using science to our cellular advantage. And without further delay, here's your host, Dr. Bartlett.
And we're back. It's been a minute, but it's going to be worthwhile. Hey, Berg.
Hi.
Okay, so Berg and I were actually just having a quick business meeting and talking about concepts for the clinic, and we're always thinking about how to make things better for people. And I think we stumbled on a really great podcast topic. So I was like, let's stop and let's actually record this. And we've talked before about the importance of lifestyle modification and these little things that build up and how they can make big changes for people. But then like we were like going down our own path of us. Yes, before we've talked about the mountain climbing underwear that some people didn't understand before. But this is different. So this is actually about stuff that like when Berg and I reconnected as well, like I said, hey, these are some things that may help. And Berg heeded it and also went deeper on the research that I asked her to take a listen to. And it's paid off. So we're going to talk about some of that stuff today. I think that that's a worthy thing. Berg.
Yeah, I agree. Yes.
So we were talking about sleep and how powerful that is for our patients. And like stuff I've always known, stuff they tell you in medical school and da da da, and it's so important, and it's important for your metabolic health, and it's helpful for your stress and da da da, and thinking clearly. And I think everybody still poo-poos it. So we thought we'd talk about really, this is one topic quickly about sleep. There's been some very powerful research that's come out in one of my favorite podcasts and researchers who's a neuroscientist at Stanford University. And he's got a great podcast, Huberman Lab. And I had actually asked when Berg recently traveled to Paris, and I said, hey, you know, make sure you're taking care of your sleep. And while you got some time, this is a good podcast to listen into, because he really does an excellent job going deep and nerding out on the science of understanding your circadian rhythm and just how easy it is to reset it. And, you know, we're such a melatonin driven society at this point, and any other sleep aid and big heavy hitter medications that nobody really wants to take or should be taking as long as they end up taking, how easy it is to reset your circadian rhythm with some caveats. And so we were talking about this. And so Berg listened to this podcast, and Berg, take it away. Like, you can start saying what you were not doing before and how you and your partner Clint did these changes and like what's going on. Cause you were struggling with sleep just for a minute. I think you had a lot of life stuff, kind of not bad life stuff, but like possibility of transition going on. And like anybody that can absolutely interrupt your sleep cycle, that's normal. That's a stress phenomenon. Mm-hmm. But so this is something personal to you.
Yeah, really. So sleep is really important to me for a lot of reasons. My main goal, and we talk about this. So when we bring somebody on, we talk about, you know, why are you interested in working with us or whatever? And understanding somebody's goal, I think, is really important. My number one umbrella goal is I don't want to end up like my mother, who had dementia. And, you know, I don't know what the cause of it was, but she never slept well. She would take, like, I call them dog naps, because she would just like sleep on the floor, like curl up like a dog on the floor. She would just take naps in random places. She slept like hell during the night. It was terrible. And so, you know, I have to believe that some of her bad sleep was a contributing factor. From a personal daily standpoint, like I'm a morning person. I love getting up early in the morning. That's my time for writing, and my brain works so well. And I just, that's when my runs are better in the morning, all of these things. So the things that have happened in my life in the past 2 years, one of the big ones was starting this relationship with Clint. So we've been together. I've been living with him and his family, his teenage kids, for almost 2 years now. That's a huge lifestyle change. In addition to that, last year we trained for a 50-mile race. That screwed up my sleep because of the intensity of the running and the working out that we were doing. So I was exhausted. So over exercise can affect your sleep as well. So totally. We're still sort of swinging back around to readjusting things. And I need my morning brain. So when my sleep is screwed up, one of the things that I totally know about myself, and I even see it happening, and I can't stop this slow train, is when I don't sleep well, I'm snacking, I'm eating, I make the worst like nutrition decisions, you know, and I even know it. I'm like, I'm not hungry. I'm just tired. Like, I feel like a toddler and I just want to like have a tantrum with food because food's my thing. So
which is truly important for me. Isolating. It is. And it is not a just you thing. This is a real phenomenon.
Yeah. I mean, it's so dumb. And then I see it happening and I can't stop it. And then finally I take like a 20-minute nap and I'm like, oh, that's really all I needed. But those 3 hours where I'm struggling with myself, like a parent struggling with a toddler at the mall. Like I'm a wreck. So anyway, sleep is important to me for a lot of reasons and everything is affected by it. So I listened to this Huberman Lab thing. And first of all, I will admit, I really don't like podcasts. I'm still trying to figure out how to incorporate podcasts into my life because I love reading things and I don't really do anything where I can like mindlessly listen to a podcast. Like I'm always doing something else.
That's part of why we love you is because you help people with mindfulness and to you it's, on some level, it feels counterintuitive. I understand that. So yeah, continue.
So I was like, fine, I'll listen to a podcast while I'm working in the yard, actually.
Okay.
And so I listened to this while I was working in the yard. Cause I don't even do that. Like when I'm outside, there's nothing in my ears, but I was just like floored by this episode. I don't know if it was episode one or two. It was one of the first ones that I listened to of this guy Huberman, and everything he said to me made sense. So I highly encourage everybody to listen to his podcast because one thing that really hit me too was when it comes to chemical stuff, and I've taken chemistry classes and all of these things, and for some reason, like I'm a visual learner, so trying to understand how one chemical needs another one to do the things and to absorb it and bring it into its level in the subcutaneous and the skin levels and all of that, like that is confusing to me, but the way that he explained stuff really helped me like understand like adenosine and all of the, you know, your cortisol levels and things like that and how what he's suggesting helps with triggering these things and lowering and how this works throughout the day. Mm-hmm. So I listened to his podcast. I'm like, fine. He says that if you watch the sunset, that certain special color of light, the blue light and the orange light and all of this stuff, if you watch that for a couple of minutes before going to bed, this helps with the sleepy. And then when you wake up in the morning, if you wake up with the sunrise, 5:30 or whatever, depending on the time of year, you just need like a couple of minutes of seeing that special light. And then this resets your internal clock for this sort of like 14-hour awakeness.
Yeah.
And then you do it again. You want to, so I'm like, fine. He said it only takes a couple, 3 days to really kick in. I'm like, whatever. I'm willing to try this.
Yep.
So I was really excited about it after listening to this podcast. I talked to Clint. I'm like, look, we really need to do this. Plus, like, I really think if we can do this, this could help your daughter who's got, you know, terrible sleep, health in general. She's 17. What 17-year-old doesn't sleep like a dummy? I know I did. And So, and plus she's, you know, starting off going to college. So we really wanted to figure this out and try to like implement this with her as well. So anyway.
Yeah.
So he found an app, and I can't remember what it is, that based on where you live. So we're in Montana, and it is now officially summertime. And so he set this app to give us an alarm. It was either 5 or 10 minutes before sunrise our time.
Mm-hmm.
Because also we're in Missoula, and so we live in a bowl. We're surrounded by mountains. So technically when the sun is breaching a mountain is probably a little bit later than when it actually hits the official horizon. But anyway,
That's a good thing. Yeah, that's important even in Ohio, because we have a lot of trees. And if you're not getting enough of that exposure because you're looking through the trees, you may not get that actual benefit too, which we'll tie back into other things you can do to supplement this in a minute.
Yeah. So we've got the alarm going off, and so we wake up, and he set it to one of the, who's that Hawaiian singer guy who does the Somewhere Over the Rainbow?
Oh, I'm not even going to try. I'll butcher his name, and I don't.
Guy?
Yeah. He's fantastic.
So that's his alarm clock. His alarm clock, it's a lovely way to wake up. And so we're just like, we fall out of bed, and we open up the door to go stand on the balcony, and we just like stand there. We're not like wide awake, but we're just standing there. We're like, all right, we're looking at the sky. Literally, this is what we're doing. Okay, check. Let's go to the bathroom, brush our teeth, and let's get started with the day. We do the same thing at night. The alarm goes off. We go and we stand out there looking. Oh, we're looking this way. We're looking west, looking. And then we go and lay in bed, and we've made a promise to not have screens in the bedroom. And we never really did anyway, but to make this official, book reading only, this is it.
No iPad, no laptop, last minute email, none of that.
Nope, none of that. And so we did that. And I mean, truly now I'm naturally waking up probably around 5 o'clock. And I've always been a morning person. But now I'm waking up naturally probably about a half an hour before sunrise, which is something that Huberman kind of talks about. But the biggest thing is that 9:30 at night, and Clint and I have always joked, like, we're not going out people. Like we're kind of early to bed people, but like, early to bed, like, just kind of means like I'm done with my day and a little sleepy. No, but when I'm going to bed now around 9:30 or so, like I'm in bed after we've watched the sunset, I might read like a few pages, maybe a chapter. And then the best thing, I'm sleeping straight through the night until 5 o'clock. So I am getting a solid 7 hours, maybe 7+ if I actually make it to when the alarm goes off. And I feel amazing. And truly, like, it only took a couple of days for me to really get like a solid night's sleep. And I've been sleeping like that since we started this. And it's been since we got back. So it's been a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
2.5 weeks.
So quickly, I'll just interject. We're not going to go super into this because you should listen. Huberman actually there's so much science behind this. Like, there's new literature coming out. It feels like, if not monthly, sometimes like biweekly. But like what we're talking about here is like, what are you doing looking at the sunrise and the sunset? And it's like, what we're actually doing is we're giving our brain and our eyes, again, this is like his jam, neurochemistry, neuroscience plus ophthalmology, our light, our eyes detect these different UV spectrums. And in the morning, we actually want this blue light exposure, this very, it's lit, not just blue light, but like as close to literally the sun. That is what we're doing. This is the whole relevance of the sunrise and the sunset, is we need that. And it literally shuts down our melatonin. And so it's not just you waking up at this time, you're actually thinking better. Like, you are cognitively more alert and more functional. I said to my wife, and I've said to YouTuber, God, I wish I had known this science when I was in high school, in college, in medical school, in residency, like, because when I was in my surgery internship, I had to be at the hospital fully functioning at like 5 a.m. and sometimes maybe 6 a.m. if it was more lenient, right? And like, I clearly, I'm in Ohio, so we have very dark, long mornings in the winter that seem like they go on forever. But if I had known about these lights, like I have up here right now that I've talked to people about, I would have, while I was making my coffee, turned on this light and had that light exposure and would have felt like a normal human being by the time I hit the hospital, which is a very relevant thing if you're thinking about patient care. Like, instead of struggling and forcing myself, I would have naturally been there, right? All of us, every surgeon. That's a beautiful thing. Like, everybody should want this from healthcare providers that have to work crazy hours. But, you know, when you were talking about that app, I don't know if you know this, but like on this Garmin, probably most Garmins, you can go into the settings and kind of nerd out. And I have it set for us. I've always, basically, since I played with the settings, I like the idea of being able to go out and look at the sunset, not even know before knowing any of this. And so I have a 10-minute alert before the sunset goes down. It just buzzes on my phone. I mean, I'm on the watch. And that's just a nice, I don't know if it does a sunrise. But the sunset was important because my wife always grabs me and says, can you see the sunset? And usually I miss it because I'm like mid-thought or doing something else or drive. Now I know like to be looking for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, intentionally.
And Ohio has gorgeous sunsets.
Yeah, it's not bad. Again, you got the trees and whatever. But like, this is what biohacking is. This is using natural science to your advantage, not using something addictive, not manipulating your melatonin levels, like with something that you're taking in that you don't realize what your level of metabolizing is. If you're a slow metabolizer, you may feel like you're on Soma, you know, muscle relaxer. So you're groggy and whatever. Anyways, letting your body acclimate and do its own thing. And this is the big part of all of this is this affects your metabolic rate. This affects your productivity. You know, Saturday I did a quick little reel talking about, you know, we should all think about our body as moneymakers, not in the gross sense, but in our brain, you know, and genuinely, why don't we think about when we feel better, we perform better, which improves our quality of life, which improves our work life, which improves possibly promotions or new jobs or new companies or whatever. Like, you are literally worth the investment in yourself because of what it can, what it will do for you. But also, if you're a good person, whatever you've got bottled up in you that you need to be sharing with humanity, you need the energy and the brain power to do that, to do good in the world. And so, like, it is worth investing in yourself to learn this stuff and to do, you know, so it's like the concept of the clinic is, well, how do we get you there faster? So you're not having to muddle through thousands of hours of podcasts and piecemeal, whatever. And some podcast data is universal. Like, this is a universal thing. Unless somebody unfortunately is vision impaired, then this is actually something that they struggle with and they have to go on medication because they can't have a normal circadian rhythm, unfortunately. And so, you know, daytime cycling, they have issues with. So use the, if you have this is something universal. Now, some podcast topics are not necessarily universal because somebody's got a little bit of a different genetic mutation, this or that. And that is part of the beauty of the clinic of like, let's find out some of these things so we can hone things in for you. You know, genes turn on, genes turn off. You can have the gene and it not be being utilized, you know, both ways, good and bad, both ways. But, you know, we talked about the sleep thing and Berg was just like, this is phenomenal. Right. And so I have this little light. I have one right here in my office. I have one down in my home gym and I have one at my clinic too. And I now don't feel normal. And so it's like you have blue light, early exposure. And then most of these things have like a neutral light. And then there's a warm red light. And so it's even like, if you listen to all these different things talking about UV light spectrums, and then you've got all these people talking about, well, there's all this bad light exposure and you need to wear these glasses all the time and never, I mean, it does make a little bit of sense. The more you think about it, it makes a lot of sense actually. Why we talk about the blue light exposure late at day, because that's literally how we're supposed to start our day. So it's not all blue light is evil. That's how we're supposed to start our day. So if all you're getting, in my opinion, is blue light exposure all day, and you're not doing anything to have any other type of signal coming in, I think you're probably kind of hosed, unfortunately. But I have the same experience as Berg now, which is I get into bed and good night, Sally. And I did not used to be able to do that. Like I would get, my wife would be like, I'm going to bed. And I was like, well, okay, I'm going to do it too. You know, even though I'm not really ready, but okay. And she would be twitching 30 seconds after getting into bed. And I would be like, and now what do I do? Now I'm lost here with my thoughts, you know? And it's like, and that's not good. Cause you know, so I'm actually wiring up. And so now being able to lights go off, and I was telling Berg a few minutes before we started recording that like last night, I even noticed that we have an alarm clock that for some reason had not been triggering me visually with the light exposure, that I like nudged Chris and woke her up. And I was like, has that light always been there? Cause it felt like it was just like beaming radiation at me. And so anyways, I did not take care of it last night. I was just like, keep your eyes shut, keep your eyes shut. Don't get out of bed. Just keep your eyes shut. But I'm going to take care of that tonight. I'm not dealing with this anymore. Because once you reset that, your light stimulus that you realize that's coming in is profound. Like it's like you get a whole nother exposure. I mean, I remember, and this is off topic, but kind of fits in, but like I remember in middle school, we had to go do this thing where we had to go do a nighttime walk, and it was in the pitch darkness. Mm. It was at this random ranch camp thing in Central Texas. And we all had to like, we were paced 5 minutes apart. You had to walk by yourself. And so you got kind of spooky and scared and da, da, da. But the whole goal was you had no light exposure. You weren't allowed to have a flashlight, nothing. No. And you allowed your night vision to actually do its job. And it was profound how our eyes could adapt so quickly. Being out, just walking down this dirt road through the hills and everything, you looked up in the trees and you could see, you know, if there was a bird up there, you could see
your hearing also becomes more acute. Too.
Your hearing. Yeah. Everything. But like, that's also, I mean, this ties into the next thing we were going to talk about, which is the whole working out, which is you feel alive. You know what I mean? Like there's so much that we just feel like we're constantly being chipped away at, that you're incapable. If you don't have X, Y, Z, you don't have this technology, you don't whatever. Well, clearly you're missing out. And it's like, us being alive is pretty amazing. We have so many built-in capabilities, and I feel like there's actually so many things that are blunting our natural abilities, you know? Mm-hmm. And so go ahead, Bert. We were talking about the variable resistance training. This is a big component of our client success, honestly. And again, I would not ask anybody to do something that I did not personally do. And I have done other things. And Berg had never done variable resistance training outside of PT. PT is wise enough that they understand the power of it, but translating it into whole body muscle development and neurofeedback and all this is a totally different thing. And so I'd asked Bert, hey, I don't know, same thing. I don't know if you've looked at these studies, but they're pretty powerful. And we can talk about this more. And Berg went on her path and she did it. And I heard back from her within like about a week. And she was like, oh, this is different. This is good. Da, da, da. Mm-hmm. But we can elaborate on that if you want to, but more importantly, we were talking about how does it feel if you work out? And I was saying, I have recently, because I've been working so much, trying to think of clinic stuff, to be honest with you, very entrenched thinking about stuff, that I was not allowing myself to work out because I was seeing it, because I love it so much when I do work out, that I was thinking of it as a reward. So I was like, you didn't accomplish what you wanted to today. So, you know, and the day just went on and there were these times where I could have taken a break and done it. And I was just like, yeah, but you don't deserve it. And I'm letting that go. And I started working out again a few days ago. And I was saying to Berg, like, I don't think I realize how alive I feel. Like, mm-hmm. as I'm doing it and when I finished it. And Berg was like, oh, my God, yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, my from a personal standpoint, I think, and you and I have talked about this personally, and I can't remember if we've mentioned this on a podcast, but I think one of the things that is really that has always been helpful for me is experiencing something to get to the point where I feel the results of it, and you feel it for that X amount of time, and then when it goes away, you're like, why do I feel like hell? And then you realize you have to experience a certain level of feeling good and the benefit of something to recognize it when it's gone. Like, you don't appreciate it until it's gone. That whole thing is 100% true. You know, so what you and I were talking about, I was also the spectrum of the word stress.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
The importance of stress, or what's negative versus positive. And, you know, one of the things that I've learned about my body, and this has only been in the past 5 years that I've really come to really understand this, and I'm 46. So again, really wish I would have learned this a long time ago, or let myself too, but also sometimes the science needs to catch up. But I feel really good when my body, when I do about 2 hours worth of pretty decent exercise every day, nearly every day. I usually have a couple of rest days where they're not as intense, and I have one day that's pretty hardcore and another day that's hardcore in a different way. So I started the resistance band thing, and 100% within a week, and I was really seeing the benefits of it. My body felt great. I was getting back to some of the feeling that I had when I was doing CrossFit. I was getting injured during CrossFit, so that's part of why I stopped that. And I really like the feeling of the resistance band thing. It makes me feel strong and like I can do what I need to do with my body.
Right.
And I feel how I want to feel in my body. And then I had been doing that and I'd really created this really great program for myself for about a month. And then we went to Paris.
I'm going to pause for interjection. I forgot. Actually, the first email I got from Burke was like, I like this, but, and I was like, one, are you doing this to the metronome? Two,
yeah.
Do you have the right bands? Three,
yep.
Are you making sure your form is okay? And because Burke knows all this, but like, it's the nuances that make a difference in the success of this. And then she was like,
yeah.
And then a week later, I get another email. And then it was like, I get it. I see it. Feel it. Like, it is the execution, just like many things, if not done as close to precision as you can, you may not feel the benefit. And so, yes, right. Which is why we have Berg as our wellness advocate help people with that. Just take all the muck out of the way and make it more efficient and start getting those results and feel it. Feel alive.
Yeah. And it's we're sharing our experience because we're doing this with you. You know, we've been doing this for a bit beforehand, but to figure out some of the excuses and the BS, but also the things that will make it more fun, more less of a hat. Like, so personally, I need a workout to be fun and diverse for me to continue, to be very honest. You know, I mix up my workouts and I have a couple different things that I do because I need it to be fun. Other people, they love a prescribed thing and they need to do it this time with a person. You know, everybody's got their thing and that's great. But you got to figure out what your thing is to recognize how it's going to stick with you. And so that you'll stick with it because you want to feel the benefits of it. I finally felt the positive benefits as opposed to all of the excuses or whatever. And then when we went on our trip to Paris, I did one day of I brought my resistance bands and I brought them and I did them one day, but honestly, and this was the thing. Oh my God. We were walking like 12 miles a day. I had no energy for anything else.
Yeah, I believe that.
But because of that, I came home, I was still exhausted and dehydrated. I wasn't drinking enough at all. And had to give myself another week. So effectively I did no running and no resistance bands for 3 weeks. And
which is obscene for you.
And yes, that's really hard. And the only way mentally that I could not feel like a total slug was I was walking like 8 to 12 miles every day for 2 weeks in Paris. So come on. But still it's not the same thing. And so I've had to, over the past week and a half, work myself back up and into it. And finally, I'm getting back into it and I feel better.
Yeah.
So definitely getting out of it is not, that was not the right thing to do, but I appreciate it because I did get out of it for a second.
And maybe we can talk just for a minute more about like when we, the whole, so when I was talking about working out and doing it again and having taken a break from it obnoxiously, self-imposed, I had explained this to Berg when I was like, here's the benefits, let's give this a try. And it's what we don't realize with this variable resistance training is that there is such a profound, like if we're going to talk about how profound the sunrise and the sunset is, we're also going to talk about how profound it is that this movement and how you do it is time under tension, and the amount of brain power and brain connection, nerve connection to your hands and to your feet and through your spine and through your stabilizers that you have to do to execute this. I mean, I hope to God someday, you know, nursing homes start implementing programs that have resistance bands done correctly, because I think we could pull a lot of people out of nursing homes if this was done. You know, if it's just a deconditioning thing over time, along with nutrition. That's a whole nother thing, clearly.
Oh God. But talk about nutrition at assisted living homes. Oh my God. It's terrible. Anyway.
Yeah. So, I'm fine. You did it. I'll say it too. Same thing with people when you're looking at, brain trauma units, the neurotrauma units, people that have gone through surgery or concussions or whatever. And what they're pushing into people are these very high dextrose solutions, these high sugar. I mean, literally studies have been done looking at this and the power of the inflammation. You're trying to get brain inflammation down in people, trying to get the brain to heal. And you're literally putting stuff in that is pro-inflammatory. This isn't based on my words and my opinion. This is literally, many studies have been published on this. And this is what's going in people. And there's a big movement within the medical community of saying, not just neurotrauma units, but also like, hey, why are we feeding people the worst food possible while they are in the hospital? And we're trying to heal them, and we're giving them horrific things to eat. Horrific. High blood glucose, spiking, low protein, low quality protein. Anyways, again, sorry, tangent, but this is, we care about all of these things. We care about this in the day to day. So if you don't, if this matters in a neurotrauma unit, that profoundly, it absolutely is affecting us every day. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you're somebody who remotely promotes yourself as somebody who cares about longevity and is reading everything about neuroplasticity, and you're doing yoga 4 times a day and lots of juice cleanses, I got some news for you about your neuroplasticity. Unfortunately, we want everybody to have good brain health. Fundamental. It sounds terrible, but you don't have good brain health from neuroplasticity and all of these neurotransmitter signaling. I mean, it's not a question at all why we have so much, we struggle societally with a lot of mood complexities. I'm just going to use that word because I don't even like the word disorders. Mood complexities and capabilities. And it's absolutely, we are not giving our body what it needs. And like that's so sad. But it's like, this is a neurochemistry thing. Like, get real. I don't know how else to say that. You know, Huberman, going back to the podcast that you listened to about the sleep, you know, I love listening to him because he does dive deep on this stuff. And I would never even try to go there because he's literally doing the research on this. All I need to do is glean his brain and help people have a clinical impact with that. I'm not going to outdo Huberman. I don't want to. I think he's brilliant. He stays in his lane.
Yeah.
And I tip my hat. Someday it would be awesome if we could have him on this podcast. What a joy that would be. We'll put that into the universe. Andrew Huberman, we want you on our podcast. But it's everything. Everything starts with brain health. So when we're talking about the variable resistance training again, you're getting such profound brain. You're using your brain. You could go to the gym and you could do a weight machine where it's going in one direction, and all you do is you just huff it and it just stays in the same plateau and there's no 3D, anything else. And you know what? You can be listening to a podcast and totally zoning out and asking your body to do this thing because you're not actually getting neurofeedback from your brain to your body. Now, on a very simple level, a lot of people can relate to this, is that there's a lot of ankle sprains that have happened to people, and a lot of people have gone to physical therapy for that. And if anybody can remember this, one of the first things that a physical therapist asks you to do when you're no longer having to wear a boot all the time is you start drawing the alphabet out in capitals with your big toe in the air. And everybody says, that's the dumbest thing on the planet. Why do we do that? Because that is actually the fastest way and the only way to prevent re-injury of ankle sprain is better neurofeedback. Everybody thinks it's a splint, another ankle splint, more tape, da-da-da. No, it's actually having better three-dimensional biofeedback of where your feet are to your brain that prevents you from tripping again or from proprioception, faster interaction with a soccer ball or anything else. That is actually, that's where the moneymaker is. But it's kind of boring. People don't quite understand it. It seems dumb. It's not strengthening anything. So why do we do that? And it's like, again, we've lost track of how our brain works with the rest of our body. And anyway, so I was saying when I was working out, and Berg was chiming in on this too, but it is one of those things that, like, it's not just feeling, when I say feel, oh, I feel alive because I worked out. I feel stressed in a way that I can't explain. I feel capable. And kind of tying back into that, we've kind of been taught to feel incapable without all kinds of stuff. And this is simply a very specific type of workout that's just making you engage every muscle fiber. And you're shaking at the end if you're doing this correctly. And you're exhausted at the end of it. And also within about a couple minutes after you finish, you're kind of like, I'm tired, but I feel great. And those muscles actually feel stronger. And you like look in the mirror and you're like, oh, I can actually tell I worked out because I've got a pump going. I mean, how many women can say, I look in the mirror and I can tell that my blood flow is increased to my muscles? That is not a gross thing.
Yeah, I think that's great.
So why wouldn't you? You know, it's like one of the things, but like that stress, you know, Chris and I started watching, it was kind of humid last night. So we decided to opt in and not sit out on the deck for once for dinner and have her eaten alive by mosquitoes sometimes. Anyways, so I was like, oh, I'll concede. Let's watch a little funny TV show, something mindless that I'm terrible at watching mindless things, but let's do it. And there was a show called Snowflake Mountain. Hilarious. I actually like it. And the guys who lead it are not jerks. And the snowflake term is actually more about, don't take offense to anybody, I'm going to say a younger generation, keep it vague, that these poor individuals that they picked up, like, can't even do the dishes, like, genuinely, and they brag that they don't know how to do the dishes or load the dishwasher. So it's funny, but also the entire goal is not to torture these individuals, it's to learn capability and also physical capability of what they're able to do. So like they had to go chop down a tree. They had to get their own fire. But as a team, they had to chop down a tree and they had to get the tree back to camp. And they were all whimpering and whining and as you would expect. But at the end of it, I mean, you can't make up the things that people say when you finally feel alive.
You're like, I just effing cut down a tree.
Yeah, but it's like, I didn't know my body could do that. Like I don't have any callus on my hands and I've never swung an axe. I've lived in Manhattan my whole life. Like, this is ridiculous. I press a button and I get heat at my house. Why don't I have this here in my actually very glamorous yurts, in my opinion, that they get to stay in? But anyways, but like, it is that feeling alive. And I think this is also what drew, you know, you're such a nature person. And, you know, you used to ride your bike all over Columbus when you were here. Like, you wanted to be around it all the time. And we would sit outside and drink coffee and talk because we could sit inside, but we wanted to go outside. And we intuitively knew back then how important that connection with nature is. But it's more than just nature. It's our neurochemistry, you know? Yep. It's our neurobiology. We need it. And anyways, I called it a stress and feeling alive. I can't remember how you were talking about it kind of like a stress as well. But you were like,
I like the word challenge.
Yeah, but you were saying, this is actually what was really cool. You were like, how do we say, what's the negative term? Like, what's a good, there's lots of terms, but like, what's a good negative term for a stress that's not doing good things for your body versus a good physical stress?
Right. I don't know the answer to that. Like, you know, but I think it's personal for each person. So like a negative stress for me is like, I don't know, like I'm not sleeping well. There's something going on with my relationship. I'm not in the right, like in the right job. Like it's going against all of my being. I mean, I remember being in that position before I quit that job. Like it just hated everything. It sucked my soul. So things that I think that are negative stressors They just make me feel bad. And I don't know the word for that other than negative stress. And then positive stressors are things that make me feel like a freaking badass.
There you go.
You know, like I just did this really mental thing all day long. I feel really smart. I figured this thing out, or I freaking ran this marathon. I did a 50 miler, you know, I lifted this heavy thing.
Yeah.
Painted the pergola. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like we've been trained that unless it's a experience that only makes your body feel at ease, then it can't be good.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And I feel like, no offense to CrossFitters, CrossFit on some level, I used to wholly endorse and love it. Truth. Because I love the concept of the functional applicability of CrossFit, but that CrossFit capability and injury risk is too high. It's too high. And it turns out you don't have to be doing, it's not a necessity. It's, you know, you're putting yourself more at risk for not being able to do something functional because you're going to injure yourself. Well, that's not functional. But anywho, I know it works for a lot of people and kudos to them, but there's a lot of people that if they're trying to get from the couch into feeling this way, that is probably not the methodology that's going to make that happen for them. But yeah, so it's one of those things of, you know, when we talk about, I think it feels very vague to people when we talk about metabolic health. Berg, how are we on time?
I've got like a few minutes.
Okay. So we'll wrap this up then. So like when we talk about metabolic health, everybody's like, this is so abstract. I don't understand it. This sounds like I don't need this. I don't understand. All we're saying is, how do we get you to literally fire the best you can at a cellular level, neurochemistry, neurobiology, muscle tone, bones, decreasing risk for osteopenia, osteoporosis as we age? Because that's not just an aging phenomenon. That's a mineral problem. That's a, your body is literally leaching minerals that you're probably not getting through your nutrition from your bone to maintain serum levels. It's also, we know that people's bones start to thin so that they can store more fat in them, in the marrow, because they need a place to store more fat because we have an energy problem in what we're nutritionally doing. So like all of these things, it's like, how do we avoid all these things without having to convince you research paper by research paper, which I can tell you,
who's going to read them anyway?
Well, taking a one concept thing and trying to understand how that one thing, this is the problem. This is why I say the power of the N of one is because everybody's slightly different. And without looking at these things and somebody implementing it, one size fits all doesn't do a lot. Understanding neurochemistry, understanding neurobiology, that's different. Most of those underpinnings, pretty darn close. Okay. Relevant, maybe a little tweak here or there, but you still got to get the stuff in to make things work. You got to trigger your body in the right way. So it's like, just heed what we're trying to get people to do, which is be the best you physiologically, neurochemistry, biochemistry. If you're somebody that cares about neuroplasticity, your brain's ability to create new connections and when you're sleeping, I mean, you want to talk about making your supercomputer brain, the sleep thing, that's the only time it works. It is literally rewiring everything when you're sleeping. So if you're not getting good sleep, you know, it's crazy to me. When I was in medical school, I remember I would always have the option of like, okay, I'm going to pull an all-nighter. This is who I am. Da 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 da. It always works for me. You know, and my sister Barb, I thought this was more of a faith thing, but I think she understood something that I didn't understand. And she would be like, Heather, don't stay up. Everything's going to be fine. Go to sleep. Just go to sleep. It's going to be fine. And then I'd also read more studies about like, there may be times that on super complex stuff that we cannot cognitively consciously pull out, but our brain can grab it for us. And so that's that kind of gut reaction on things of like, I know this answer. I'm having a hard time like relaying it exactly to what it is, but like my gut says this is the answer. And it's because my subconscious knows da 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 da. I'm having a hard time. If I had to explain this to somebody right now, getting that all out, you know, in under a minute to answer this one question. Right. And this is kind of like that intuitism of everything. Okay. But anyways, that's a big deal. Like this is going back to why we're talking about the sleep thing. It's a bigger deal than most people. Oh, I just don't sleep, or I'm proud of myself because I don't sleep.
Yep.
And
yeah,
I mean, the last
thing, and that's like a social thing as well. Is that we as a culture, we sort of like pride ourselves on, you know, well, I pulled an all-nighter, or, you know, oh, I only got 3 hours of sleep last night. Well, then what did you do with all of those hours when you weren't sleeping? Mm-hmm. Did you solve world problems? Probably not.
Yeah. Well, and my sister was right. And I would do well on the exams, yep. even though I thought I wasn't prepared because I could not get it out. But the last thing I'm going to say.
It was in there, though.
It was in there. And it was just pulling things up fast enough. But also cortisol makes you blunt your cognitive frontal ability for reasoning stuff. So it's like you're kind of mm-hmm. screwed on some level taking tests because your cortisol is going to go up. And then you're not trusting why you want to choose this answer, but your supercomputer's got it for you. Anyways, but the last thing I'm going to say, so there was this book years ago, and I remember, I think you and I talked about it, Burke, but maybe not, but it was called The 5 a.m. Club by Robin Sharma. And the entire concept of the book was trying to understand and telling this kind of cheesy story of these characters about waking up in the morning and how powerful it was to get up in the morning and how... You know, I agree with this. You have peace in the morning, but some people it doesn't work well to start doing deep thinking and creative work. Some people need to work out first thing. Some people need to eat breakfast if that is really part of who they are and it works for them and they feel good. But now I'm like, this is an easy thing because it's about the circadian rhythm. but the entire story was about this forced thing. You should do it and for all these gains instead of like coaching somebody into how you do it and then you get all the benefits. I mean, that's more powerful to me, but anywho, Berg.
And one thing related to that real quick that just occurred to me when we were talking about the blue light, and I'm just throwing this out there. So I just realized that when I got my new transition lenses at Costco, they automatically did put the blue light blocker on these. So when I go outside in the morning, I need to make sure I don't have my lenses on, even though they say, make sure to wear them all the time to get used to the transition lenses and all that stuff. Well, this has the blue light blocker, so not in the morning.
There you go. Yeah. It's all about understanding that UV light thing, man. Berg.
Yep.
Great chat. Thanks for finding the time.
It was fun, as usual.
All right. Well, until next time, signing off.
Okay.
Bye.
All right. Toodles.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Metabolab, Your Biohack, with Dr. Heather Bartlett. If you wouldn't mind, please hit the like button so we can share more content with similar-minded biohacking folks. And as always, please feel free to share on your social channels if you found value in today's podcast. If you're interested in working with Dr. Bartlett, please feel free to learn more at www.metabolab.clinic. Again, that's www.metabolab.clinic.
Disclaimer, the previous podcast and content are not medical advice. Always seek counsel with your own private clinician before starting any new health-impacting life changes.